Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government with news from the legislature, including plans for the Gateway Housing Center. Those plans in Monticello have been scrapped, but the county legislators say the project is still very much alive. Plus, the Sunset Lake LDC is being formally dissolved, marking a shift in county operations. We'll learn more. Are you foster curious? We'll meet social worker and mom of five through foster care and a former foster mom and advocate are hosting an open and honest conversation about fostering in the region. Plus, local singer-songwriters are taking the stage for Sing It Loud, a concert of protest songs aimed at inspiring change far and wide this Sunday. And a deeply personal cabaret show called The Bookmaker's Daughter coming to town. It's all coming up, but first the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. President Trump is returning home after spending much of this week in the Mideast. He met with Gulf leaders and signed several multi-billion dollar agreements. Many of them call for billions of dollars of investment in U.S. companies, such as aircraft maker Boeing. But there appear to be few conversations about political issues, including the war in Gaza. Israel has stepped up its attacks on Gaza. It says it's pressuring Hamas to release the hostages. More than 300 Palestinians have been killed in just the past 3 days. President Trump did mention that something needs to be done.
A lot of good things are going to happen over the next month, and we're going to see. And we have to help also out the Palestinians. You know, a lot of people are starving on Gaza, so we have to look at both sides. But we're going to do a good job.
President Trump also said he was not surprised that Russian President Vladimir Putin did not go to talks with Ukrainian representatives in Turkey. These talks concluded quickly in Turkey today. Trump had hinted he might go to these talks himself. He said Putin would not go if he didn't, so Trump was not surprised at the outcome. He says nothing will happen to end the Ukrainian war until he and Putin meet. Fluoride will soon be banned in Florida's public water systems under a bill signed into law yesterday. From member station WUSF, Douglas Soule has more.
Governor DeSantis says the restriction allows Floridians to choose whether they use fluoride.
Yes, use fluoride for your teeth, that's fine, but forcing it into the water supply is basically forced medication.
Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has concerns that ingesting fluoride can cause health problems. But dental groups are adamant that low levels of the mineral only have health positives, preventing cavities, especially for those without regular access to care. Florida's ban begins on July 1st. A similar law in Utah, the first state to target fluoride, took effect earlier this month. For NPR News, I'm Douglas Soule in Tallahassee.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a drop in home building activity last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 10 points in early trading.
Builders broke ground on fewer single-family homes in April than they did the month before. Permits for future home building activity were also down. A survey by the National Association of Home Builders shows builders are feeling less confident as high tariffs drive up the cost of building materials and high mortgage rates discourage would-be buyers. Mortgage giant Freddie Mac says the average cost of a 30-year home loan inched up this week to 6.8%. Two of the nation's biggest cable companies are tying the knot. Charter Communications says it will buy Cox Communications in a deal worth more than $34 billion. Cable companies are under pressure as viewers cut the cord and turn to streaming services. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 20 points. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. It's Friday, and every Friday we're joined by Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government, with news from Monticello. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Tim?
I'm fine. There's lots of news happening. I want to get into it here. We've been talking about a few of these things. First off, the Gateway Housing Center, that was the shelter that was being planned in Monticello. Mm-hmm. Some plans for that have been scrapped, so to speak, but there's still a plan to construct something. What's going on there? Why did the things change here?
Well, the only thing that definitively has been scrapped for right now is the location. It was planned for several years now for Petaluga Road. It's a dead-end road just outside the village of Monticello, next door to the county jail and the sheriff's office. And that was chosen because it's already county-owned property. It had been purchased when we had purchased land years ago for the creation of the new jail. A public hearing brought out some neighbors who didn't want that next door to them. No surprise on that. But then that sparked a discussion amongst legislators that is this the ideal site? Interestingly enough, the neighbors' concerns really didn't come up yesterday when they were talking about setting another public hearing. And actually, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. Mm-hmm. The reason there was the idea of a second public hearing was that after the first public hearing, there was a vote to go ahead and do a 25-year lease with Honor, which is a homeless shelter operator out of Middletown, on that Petaluga Road site. However, it did not get the required supermajority of 6 votes. It only got 5 affirmative votes. This time, moving forward with a second public hearing to do this again, got only 1 affirmative vote. Not that the public hearing needed a supermajority vote, but it didn't even pass to get to a public hearing. Only Kat Scott was in favor because the other legislators agreed with what I think, in particular, legislator Amanda Ward brought up. It's her district that this would be located in, said the infrastructure is not there. It's too far from town. It's not a walkable distance. We would have to extend water and sewer from the village at great cost. Legislator Perello, Joe Perello also has deep concerns about the $8 million price tag associated with it, which is money that the state has indicated would come our way to help create this facility. And he is like, for $8 million, we should be creating more than a 20-bed, which is actually 10 rooms, double occupancy facility. He felt that was being overdone. Of course, county officials were like, we've been working on this for
overdone,
a year.
Overdone, or you mean like not enough?
No, it would be $8 million. He said it would create the Taj Mahal, and that's not necessary. He feels like we should maybe even be looking at an existing building to maybe renovate, although that would come with its own expense as well. So all that is to say, we are not back to the drawing board on the actual facility itself. I think right now what the legislature is going to be thinking about in the next few weeks or months is where else might a facility such as this go? It's a homeless shelter, but really called a gateway housing center, because the idea is it's going to be temporary transitional housing, not a place for people to stay, I think, anything longer than 28 consecutive days. And the idea is to get them back in the workforce and back into safe and affordable housing. And where that can happen right now, it seems like folks are looking at the downtown areas, Monticello, Liberty, our social services campus too. At this point, I don't have any specifics on any exact locations.
Would this be existing county property like the last location, or is this looking at all other options?
It could be, but I think it's looking at all other options too, that there might be property, owned by others that legislators would be interested in.
So there's no current existing shelter. The county houses people in various locations that we've discussed before, including local hotels, motels.
Right.
There's a housing crisis. Things have changed, it seems, in the last few weeks. How long do we think this process might go on then?
Your guess is as good as mine on that one, because there's going to be, I'm sure, opposition to any location that is chosen. Unfortunately, there's a stigma associated with homeless people and homeless shelters. A unfair one, in my opinion, that they're all criminals and they're dangerous and et cetera. But as somebody once said, all of us are only one blown tire away from possibly being homeless. It can happen that quickly. I think I saw somebody, a meme on Facebook the other day, which is, we are all closer to being homeless than we are to ever being billionaires. And if you think about it, we are. So listen, all the legislators that I've talked to are interested in seeing what can be accomplished. There's a wide variety of opinions on what should be built, how it should be built, and as we found out, where it should be built. So best I can tell people is stay tuned.
Are there deadlines tied to the state funding? Do you have to something by a certain date in order to qualify or continue to receive those funds?
I believe
from Albany?
Now that the state budget has passed, I doubt the $8 million will be waiting for us if and when we finally make up our mind in this budget cycle. But somebody said yesterday that it has been offered over several budget cycles for, I think, the past decade. So it doesn't mean that we're not going to be able to access grant money. In fact, I'd be surprised if in the end, if we do decide on a location and a facility, I'd be surprised if we couldn't find grant money for that, because it is something that the state, I think, wants us to do. It's just a question of how much money will be available and when, because they aren't going to give us anything until we've made up our minds. And that right now is the big nut to crack.
Does that mean that the legislature hasn't made its mind up over the last decade?
Yes, although there have been successive legislatures with that. So, but also there really hasn't ever been as concerted an effort as there is has been now in the past few years to really get this kind of facility going. There's been talk about it for a long time, but there was talk about let's let the Federation for the Homeless do it. But they're really focused on actually being a soup kitchen and a resource that they don't have on-site housing there. And their building would require a lot of renovations as well. They used to, I think, have some temporary housing there. But it's just, it's, like I said, a big nut to crack, and it's going to take some time still.
Let's talk about another facility that's not without its own controversy. The local development corporation that owns the property on which the Sunset Lake Nursing Home in the town of Liberty is located voted to dissolve and return the facility back to Sullivan County. So,
yes,
what does that mean?
Well, it's really the property that the LDC owned. The county still had always had the certificate of need, which is the operational certificate, and had the consultant Infinite Care, and still does, operating the facility under a contract with the county. The LDC was created under the prior legislature when there was originally an idea to sell the facility, and then that morphed into leasing the facility. And the current legislature, I think, had felt, and the current board as it exists, felt the LDC was an unnecessary layer to it all. And, of course, what had happened in the end, because the LDC took it over, I believe the town of Liberty started assessing taxes on what was formerly a tax-exempt property. So the idea now, I think, is to the deed will go back for the property to the county. Probably, I would assume the property will go tax exempt again, although I don't know. That's up to the town of Liberty and the county to figure all of that out. That's going to be a big chunk of change, I think around $400,000 that the town, if it goes back to being tax exempt, the town won't have anymore. Then everything else will continue as it has, where Infinite Care continues to operate as the consultant of the facility and operate the facility. There's a mix of county and Infinite Care employees there. It will simply be that ownership of the parcel reverts right back to the county.
So the county's back in operating it, and it's not for sale. Like, the LDC was formed basically to sell.
The LDC was not formed to operate it. The LDC was not operating the facility. Right. The county and Infinite Care continued to operate the facility. But the LDC, by unanimous decision of the LDC board, and I think support of the legislature, felt that, no, we don't need this around anymore. It does not change the fact that right now, at least, the county continues to pursue a potential long-term lease arrangement or operational arrangement with Infinite Care. But that could change too. It basically, as I said before, removes what the legislators and the LDC felt was an extra layer that wasn't needed.
Does the consulting company that operated the LDC owe the county money?
Yes, they do. I'm several million dollars. I don't remember offhand. But that's, I think the hope has been with that can all be settled and reconciled if and when Infinite Care gets the certificate of need that the county wants to transfer over to it so that it can actually operate the facility.
Legislator Kat Scott, according to some reporting, says that is about $8.4 million. Mm-hmm. And so is there a chance of seeing that money?
There's the hope. The chance of it. I mean, yeah, that's asking me to have a better chance, crystal hope. Ball than I have.
I don't know which one's better, chance or hope. Dan. All right. We're talking to Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government. Lots of news out of Monticello to talk about. This is maybe troubling for some families. The New York State Child Care Assistant Program will stop accepting new participants and recertifications as of July 1st. Is that also a funding concern? What's going on there with that program?
Yeah, what happened is the state, much to our happiness, actually had expanded eligibility for it and really made a very generous program to help people out who are needing to afford childcare, which can be very expensive. The eligibility thresholds were lowered, I guess. They were made, like I said, more generous. But unfortunately, as our Commissioner John Little put in an email to me yesterday, the accelerating utilization of this program has outpaced the large amount of money that has been provided for it. I guess in some ways we shouldn't be surprised, right? Because insufficient funds were added to this year's state budget to support previous year's large expansion of eligibility, Sullivan Social Services has been forced to, like all the other counties across the state, to start denying applications due to a lack of funds. The July 1st start of denials will not impact recipients until they reach their 12-month recertification time. So you may not recertify, for example, until October or something, so it won't impact you till then. But starting on the 1st, there's going to be denials of applications, which will impact those who are looking to get that funding for the first time, and then eventually the recertifying families. It'll be reviewed on a monthly basis to determine when new applications will be accepted again, because this is not a situation that any of us want to see continue. But when funding runs out, just like we've said with like the HEAP program, that's it. The program, even though we want to continue it, it can't continue. So,
and again, this will only impact people that were new or trying to recertify, not existing folks.
Well, the existing folks have to recertify every 12 months. So when their 12 months comes up, and if we're still denying applications, they'll be denied on the recertification.
A housing plan, a fair housing plan, was approved by the legislature, required when you're trying to access some HUD funding. What does that plan look like, and how did this come? How does this help with the housing crisis?
Yeah, it's an affirmatively furthering fair housing plan. That's the full name of it. Prepared to satisfy the county's obligation to affirmatively further fair housing, surprise, surprise, as a recipient of funding from the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. This is required by the Fair Housing Act, and requires all recipients of funding to take meaningful actions in the pursuit of removing barriers that restrict access to housing based on race, color, national origin, religion, gender, familial status, and disability. The interesting thing about all of that, because I just saw the plan yesterday as it was approved by legislature, it's in the agenda items for it, and I'll put it up on the website too, is has a lot of interesting demographic data on the county. Don't ask me to recall any specific ones. But if you're looking about demographic data for race, color, national origin, yeah, you can go to the census website to find it. But this report puts it all in a very distinct area. It's got the tables, but it also has color-coded maps. And it's really interesting to see the demographics of the county, how it's changed over the years, what it reflects currently. If people are looking just to see, you know, who's where and what in Sullivan County, this is a very useful document. Even if you're completely not involved in housing, if you're just looking at who is it that's here in Sullivan County, it's got some interesting data. Again, you can find it right now in our legislative agenda section. It's under the agenda documents that we have when you can view live legislature meetings. I'm going to extract it from that later today and put it up as its own document so that people can more easily find it, because I think it'll be useful to folks far removed from housing, but still who need to know sort of the demographics of the county.
We're going to take a break in a minute, but before we go, I just wanted to note that June was declared Pride Month in Sullivan County, which notable considering some places across the country where we're hearing that's not the case.
Yeah, it's sort of become politically incorrect in a way, isn't it? Anyway, I will refrain from my personal opinion on that. I will just simply say that we had a large group yesterday that joined legislator Kat Scott in proclaiming June to be Pride Month. I took a picture with all the legislators standing with them as well, reflecting the, I'm not going to get the whole acronym right here, LGBTQIIA plus or something like that. She had to say it several times over, and she had to really go slow through it all. But all that is to say that Sullivan County is proud to be an inclusive place that is accepting of many different backgrounds, identities and religions and that kind of thing. We need to continue here. I will put my personal opinion in. We need to continue that. I think that we need to be very open to people. And yes, we can have our disagreements, but we don't need to be disagreeable about it. And for the month of June, the Pride flag is going to be flying proudly underneath the county flag in front of the government center. And that's just going to, again, be a visual representation that, we welcome you here. let's talk, let's sit down, even if we have differing views on things. And I think JFF was trying to accomplish that too with their program on the different voices,
one getting people step.
There, one small step. And yeah. I look at it in that vein as let's just take one small step to better understand each other.
Let's take a break and we'll be back with more from Dan Hoost, Sullivan County government, including why was Dan wearing a life jacket to the meeting yesterday? And why were other folks doing the same? You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, the story of biochemist Katalin Karikó, whose research was dismissed. A decade later, she won the Nobel Prize.
If you want to do something, you know, you find a way. And if you don't, then you find excuses.
Plus, a medical sculptor making hyper-realistic body parts for physicians and nurses to train on. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're back with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. So why were you wearing a life jacket yesterday, and why were other county officials doing the same? Oh, sorry.
It's the latest fashion statement. Haven't you heard about this? So
it's not a metaphor like for yeah, anything, right? No. Drowning.
Yesterday was wear your life jacket to work day, which we had done. I think the Park Service was the one that had clued us in on all of this because, of course, they oversee the Delaware River, or as they call it, the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River. It's part of the National Park System. We're proud to have it here in Sullivan County. Unfortunately, on the Delaware, usually averaging about once a year, if not more, somebody perishes by drowning. None of them have ever been wearing a life jacket. And while, yes, other circumstances may be involved, alcohol or drugs, not a good combination on deep, fast-running water. But if you're going in there without a life jacket, especially folks who, a lot of them are first time in the Delaware River, you do not realize how rapidly moving that water can be, mm-hmm. the different undertows with it, the idea too that, and I've come close to this myself because I swim in the river, you can get your foot caught in a rock and that current can be so heavy that it wants to keep pushing you under while you're stuck. It just can be a literally deadly situation. You need to be wearing your life jacket, even if you don't plan to get in the water, you're just on the water. But this also applies to our lakes and ponds and deeper, faster flowing creeks in Sullivan County. There's all sorts of things that could happen, and being caught without a life jacket can basically be the end of your life. And so that's why I was wearing one yesterday. I explained all that to the legislature. Dozens of our staff members across our different campuses wore it as well. It was a fun thing to do, even though it's a very somber, sobering message. And hopefully it raised some awareness about life jackets. I did not wear it for the whole meeting, but I wasn't swimming for the whole meeting. In fact, I wasn't swimming for any of the meeting. And for those who are horrified to possibly watch the video, I kept all my other clothes on. I did not switch to swim trunks and put on the life jacket. I was actually, for the viewer's pleasure, I was still in a full suit jacket, wearing the life jacket over top of it.
It's 10:23, Dan. Calm down. All right, listen. Let's talk. Well, it's an important story, information. I mean, because we always bring stories every summer, every year. Unfortunately, yep. about this, and we want folks to remember. Wear your life jacket when you're on the river or other bodies of water.
Please.
Experienced corrections officers being hired in the next 12 months will have their starting salary adjusted to reflect their years on the job. That's a part of just hiring here in the county that is a need, but also as a result of this prison strike that happened earlier yes. this year, there are yep. other folks that are out there. So tell me more about that.
The state's loss has been many of the county's gains. I mean, the state has thrown some wrenches into us trying to hire some of the state correctional officers who they argue were striking illegally and are entitled to state benefits. But I think we've worked through most of the kinks of that. And we have, for example, somebody the other day who has 19 years of experience in the state correction system is now working in the county jail. We had been chronically understaffed because it's very hard to find people who are willing to deal with that kind of environment. So we had so much mandation and it was just wearing on the morale of our employees. We were losing employees, corrections officers. Well, now we've been gaining some, but we also don't want them to have to suffer some huge huge salary decrease to come work for us. So legislators agreed yesterday that at least for the next year, we are going to make sure that any state corrections officers that come over to us are going to have a salary commensurate with their years of experience, no matter where it was in the state system. And also they will have up to 10 years of credit for retirement when calculating their required 20 years of service to get county health insurance after retirement.
All right. Now let's get to some reminders here. Tomorrow, the Sullivan County Volunteer Fair is tomorrow at CCE.
Yes.
It's down the road.
It's just going to be down the road from here. I will be there representing the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, although I also think I will take some pictures for the county because this was something that the county and Cornell Cooperative put together. It's also a chance for volunteers to join what used to be called our Retired Senior Volunteer Program, which the funding for that was completely demolished by the federal government in the past few weeks. But that has given us an opportunity now to expand the program and beyond anyone who's 55 and over, it's people who are 55 and under, too. Mm. So if you're interested in what the volunteer opportunities are, please come out to that tomorrow, 10 to 2 at Cornell Cooperative. You'll get to see me. I think some people get to see you.
Yeah, we'll be there, too, for Radio Catskill to offer up some volunteer opportunities. That DPW surplus equipment auction is now ongoing through May 29th. I saw some of the pictures. There looks like a van, some trucks, and some of those other compressory things you talked about.
Yeah, it's hoorah stuff, right? Now, there's all sorts of interesting things. We even have a lathe, a hay blower. I was like, well, we need a hay blower? But actually, we do have some large fields to cultivate. So there's 31 different items, and all bids start at just $1. So you could get some really good deals on this. It's all online at aarauctions.com.
It goes through May 29th.
Yep.
There's more discretionary funding available for folks. So you've approved some of those applications. There's still some funding available.
There's still funding available.
Local nonprofits.
Application is right on the website. It's under helpful links. Basically, anywhere you go on the website, 2025 discretionary grant funding application. Legislators just agreed on a second round of applicants to get awarded yesterday, and there is still money left. So it will be used until, what have we been saying today? Until funds are exhausted. That seems to be today's theme.
And your citizen preparedness workshop is coming up Tuesday.
Yes, citizen preparedness, 6:30 p.m. at our Emergency Operations Center. It's free, but pre-registration is required just because you're going to get a free preparedness kit afterwards. It's going to have all sorts of cool things in it. It just runs for a couple hours. It'll be through the National Guard at our Emergency Operations Center near the county airport, 6:30 on Tuesday.
And the Memorial Day service list is available online for Memorial Day. And before we go, I want to just acknowledge the valedictorians that you recognized, which is an annual tradition. You know, Kimberly Izar is our new reporter. She was viewing the ceremony and found it very moving to see all the valedictorians recognized.
It gives you hope for the future of humanity. It really does. We're going to have some photos up on social media later today once I make sure I spell all the names correctly. But it's wonderful to see these young friends, fresh faces, really looking to make a difference in their community and the world they live in, and already have.
Deanna Hoost from Sullivan County Government, thank you so much. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you then.
2 days in a row. How fun. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about the Sing It Loud concert coming up this weekend. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Sonia Headland. Join me Saturday morning for Ballads and Banjos. It's a diverse selection of folk music from some of my favorite singer-songwriters. Ballads and Banjos, Saturday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Inspired by Rolling Stone magazine's 100 Best Protest Songs of All Time, local singer-songwriters and artists from the surrounding areas are coming together Sunday for Sing It Loud, a live concert dedicated to the songs of protest and social impact. The goal? To spark inspiration both locally and across the country, encouraging people to raise their voices through music. I spoke to musician Scott Palermo, who's participating in the event, and co-organizer, our own Kathy Geary.
We thought about inviting musicians that were currently writing protest songs, because most of the protest songs on the list, you know, they're it's songs that we've all heard for a long time. But wouldn't it be great if we could find musicians, they could sing their original songs and have a 2-hour concert and have a lot of different performers do a couple of originals and then do one of those songs from the Rolling Stone list of the best protest songs that the audience would know, and then get people to sing along on those songs, hand out some lyrics, and get people energized and kind of involved.
For both of you, what role do you think these songs play today, especially in rural communities like ours?
I feel like these songs are resonating more in the current tumultuous environment than they have in a long time. I think that they've sort of slid under the surface, and now they're coming back. And when in studying a couple of the songs and preparing for the concert, I just was really struck by it. How much the lyrics still resonate with what's happening today. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some things that have resurfaced that nobody's worried about for a long time, and all of a sudden now they're becoming current again.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
What does being part of this concert mean to you as an artist and personally?
It means a lot to me. I've found that I find it somewhat humorous when I hear folks of a younger generation saying, gee, I don't like it when there's politics in my songs. I don't like it when there's controversy. That's the roots of music. Music happened because people had something to say, and something they were either really happy about or really unhappy about. And to have these songs, to me, come forth and say, this is how you write a song that says something, that does something, that makes an impact, is important in this day and age in the way that music today is homogenized.
Kathy, I want to ask you, you, of course, are the host here at Radio Catskill, Saturdays now and then.
That's right.
You're an artist and performer as well. What, same question to you, though. What does it mean to you from an artist's perspective to be a part of this and to express yourself in this way?
It's probably the most meaningful thing in my life at this time. You know, I really feel that every single person has a certain power in our culture. And at this time, I feel that if we don't all come together and respond to the situations that are happening politically, you know, that it's just going to wash over us. And when I think, well, what can I do? Well, I've lived several decades, and I've benefited a lot from being a white woman with the freedoms that we have in this country. And am I willing to actually go out there and march without a mask on, scan my face, see who I am? I'm willing to do that. I'll go out there. I'm Kathy Geary. Here's what I think. Here's what I believe. I'm going to stand up. And what's the most powerful thing I can do as an individual? I was given the gift of music. I was given a voice. I was given an ability to sing a song. And so that's my tool. And I can offer that up in service of the change that I want to see. And to be able to share that with other musicians in this concert is also adding an extra layer of satisfaction for me. It's going to be a very exciting and more than entertaining. I hope that we bring people to the understanding that our power is being together, that as the community that we have to come together, because we're the people.
Can be different voices. There can be different opinions, and we can share them, and we can have dialogue, and we can talk about them. We don't have to agree on everything, but we can come together and talk about it. And I believe music brings people together, which is what draws me to music in the first place, is that it brings people together and the voices together. And that's where the singing together comes together. Literally, we're going to be writing.
We do have a sing-along component. Mm-hmm. When, you know, I'm going to start with Blowing in the Wind. Well, you know that song. Your parents know that song. Your grandparents know that song. Let's all sing it together. Let's think about what it means. It's a very incredibly poetic and lyrical thing. And it asks a lot of questions. But, you know, there's other protest songs that are angry and sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And there's protest songs that are funny. When I think of Joni Mitchell's, they paved paradise and they put up a parking lot. You don't know what you've got until it's gone. Mm. That is a protest song. That's on the Rolling Stone list. And yet it's humorous. And it makes you think. I want to energize people to think a little bit about the things that are important to them and to kind of look at the world with fresh eyes.
I want to ask you a little bit more about the sing-along portion that we're talking about. Do you think there's power in singing together? Do you think that that is especially relevant when it comes to protest?
In the streets, yeah, it is. It's, in the concert hall, it's hard to get people to get up and sing.
Well, we're going
to
work on that.
But it's like the feeling of being in a choir. If you've never sung in a choir, it's an astounding thing. You merge into the sound of the choir. It's a very powerful feeling. And if we can get people at this concert in the actual concert hall that was generously donated by Narrowsburg Union, the Delaware Hall, you know, we're going to have a sense of friendliness and laughter, and that's what I hope to instill.
You alluded to protest music and its rich legacy from the Joni Mitchell song you mentioned, Woody Guthrie, Nina Simone. What are some of your personal influences that you could share, Scott?
Certainly, everybody's influence is Bob Dylan. I mean, he's the heart of folk music, but certainly Woody Guthrie, and I've enjoyed studying through some of the Ash files and some of the things, the recordings that were done earlier.
Oh, the early folkways. Really? That's fascinating.
In researching for
John
this concert.
John Prine, come on. You John sing Prine.
Well,
John Prine.
Well, you know I'm
like
getting to John
it.
Prine.
Oh,
I sing a lot of John Prine, and he's a master of saying incredibly complex things in an incredibly simple way that just brings people to meaning without having to do a great deal of thought. There are other songs that you listen to that you don't get the meaning until you listen to it the fourth or fifth or sixth or tenth or twentieth time.
Oh, yeah.
But there are some songs you get that smacks you in the face right away because it's so simple and so resonant within your own heart that you understand it immediately.
That's a good question, too, because I think that there's a lot of rock and roll music that might not necessarily be categorized as protest songs. Protest songs is a real specific genre, but when I think of Neil Young, hello, rocking in the free world, you know, or Tom Petty or a lot of rock and roll, you know, the Stones, all that stuff. A lot of that was culturally significant because it engaged people to change. And something that engages people to change, you could call that protest in a way.
What would you say to younger or emerging artists about using their voices for change? And they may not know where to start necessarily. They may not know how to categorize this idea.
I think it's so tempting these days, again, in this homogenized world of music, to just write a love song. I mean, that's what we write about. Oh, we write about breakup songs. We write about love songs. But when you get down to it, certainly those are things that touch your heart. But what also touches your heart is what you feel every single day going through your life. And there are things that make you happy and there are things that make you angry. Write those things, sing those things, because they resonate with other people. None of us go through this life alone. None of us go through them as individuals. We go through it as a community of people on this planet. So write those things because they're universal with a segment, large or small, of the population.
Before we go, what do you hope that folks take away from this Sing It Loud performance experience, sing along, all the things that are going on, either in person or online? Scott, we'll start with you.
I think I'd like to have people come and just open your brains and think. Think about what the words to these songs mean, what they mean to you. Do I agree with it? Do I disagree with it? Either is fine, but how do I engage with it? I need to engage with thought, with evaluating and thinking what is going on in the world and in our country specifically right now, and how do I apply what I've those thoughts to this music, and how does that music apply to me?
Well, that was eloquently said. He's good, isn't he? So, yeah, I just want to encourage people to not be afraid, to speak your mind. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? And to vote your mind. There's a lot of people that just don't vote. You know, 30% of the voting population just kind of stays home and go, well, you know, I don't care about politics. And for me, that's the bottom line. You know, I'd love for people to come and sing and get all happy and everything, but vote your mind. Express what you want to your representatives.
Use your voice.
Use your voice. Use your voice. Because if we don't exercise our freedom of speech, we're going to lose it.
Kathy Geary and Scott Palermo using their voices in song at Sing It Loud, a live concert featuring songs of protest. That's May 18th from 1 to 3 at the Delaware Hall in the Narrowsburg Union in Narrowsburg, New York, or online at the WJFF Facebook page. Thank you both.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, are you foster curious? Fostering in Sullivan County and the region. A conversation about that after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Jason Dole. Can you believe next weekend is Memorial Day weekend already? Well, it is, and a lot of folks will be having yard sales, and Radio Catskill is no different. Our music yard sale returns for one day only, Saturday, May 24th, right here at our studios. If you want vinyl, come get vinyl. We've got records, CDs, audio equipment, instruments, all priced to move. And we're still taking donations, too, for the music yard sale. 10 to 3 next Saturday at Radio Catskill in Liberty.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, happening this Monday in Narrowsburg, Foster Curious is an open conversation about foster care. Joining me now are Abby Mortensen, a social worker and mom of five through foster care and adoption, and Susan Mendoza, former foster mom and lifelong advocate. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
What inspired this idea behind Foster Curious and gathering, and why now?
Abby actually has been coming to the Chi Hive for several years now, maybe like back in 2017.
Your business, the Chi Hive in Narrowsburg?
Yes, Chi Hive in Narrowsburg. Long story short, Abby and I started to strike up a conversation about fostering because at the time when we met, I was fostering a couple of young boys, and we shared our stories. Abby was and is fostering. A few children as well. So, you know, we just started to share our stories and realized the importance of trying to buoy each other up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Abby, I mentioned you're a social worker mom of five through foster care and adoption. What do you think are some of the most common misconceptions you hear about foster parenting?
I think there's a misunderstanding about it. A lot of people might think, they're people who just want to get paid or don't really care about the children that they're fostering, which is not the case. There's so many wonderful people out there who want to support children and families, and there's such a need for it as well.
And from someone if there's someone out there beginning to just to think about fostering and this idea of foster curious, what's the piece of advice you wish that you had early on that you could give to them?
I think a lot of people have thought about fostering children, but are hesitant because they're worried about saying goodbye. And a lot of people have said to me, I could never do it. I would get too attached. And I always say, yes, that is the point. The children deserve attachment and love. And it's a gift to both the parents and the children to attach and to be that safe place.
And Susan, at the event on Monday, you make a point of emphasizing that it's an open, casual conversation, open to the whole community. Why is that important? And talk a little bit more about the collaboration of the community in helping get this off the ground on Monday.
At the foundation of this, I believe that fostering is one of the most powerful ways to strengthen the fabric of a community. And Abby recently placed a beautiful baby with community members. And it's been such a beautiful process watching the community come out in support of that relationship. And it just continues to speak volumes to me about the power of community and being able to help those who are fostering or who wish to foster, that even though, you know, you may not feel like you personally are ready to foster a child, that there are so many ways to help support others who are.
I was just going to ask you, if someone isn't feeling like they are ready to take that step, and it's a big step, I think, a commitment, what are other ways that they can help?
So, did you want to speak?
I think, knowing other families, supporting them. Maybe you are offering to bring a meal to a family who just accepted a child or a group of children. We have actually a lot of sibling groups that need foster homes and teens. So maybe being a mentor to a teen in foster care could be really helpful. Just knowing the people and connecting can be such a supportive way.
And even within communities, you know, the nonprofits that exist within the communities, understanding who in your community is fostering, it can be really helpful to be able to offer services mm-hmm. and opportunities to support those families. You know, so in our community in particular, we have the Tustin Youth Commission and we have Tustin Social and, you know, DVAA is there as well. So and Chihive as well, you know, we offer lots of opportunity for free and supportive programming for the kids in our community.
You're a foster mom and lifelong advocate. What keeps you engaged in this work, Susan?
So my two former foster kids are just incredible human beings. I'm so very proud of them. They are in their forever home. I mean, they're now on the verge of leaving. One of them has left, is now engaged and to his partner who, both of them are now in the military. And in fact, one of my foster kids will be, speaking at the brewery as well. So people will have an opportunity to ask him questions about his experience within the system as well. Yeah.
So let's remind folks the details. It's Monday at the Big Eddie Brewery in Narrowsburg there on Main Street. Starts at 6. What else do people need to know? Where can they get more information?
Oh, yes. Where can they get more information?
You have a Facebook page or social media?
We actually don't. But look, I just want to put this out there that the Big Eddie Brewery Company, which is at 93 Main Street in Narrowsburg, they are hosting this. And one of the owners, Jake, is a lawyer in family court out in Monticello. And I just want to share this quote from him if I can. He says, "Family court depends heavily on willing and qualified foster parent resources, particularly when the foster parent is a relative of the child in question. In many cases, a foster resource becomes the most important person in a child's life who is having contact with family court. I cannot stress enough how important it is for us as family court practitioners to have willing and able foster parents." Mm-hmm. So he's very keen on us supporting this event. Again, it's in Narrowsburg, 93 Main Street at the Big Eddie Brewery Company. We're so grateful for them for hosting this event. It's free. You can bring your kids. The Tustin Youth Commission will be there for childcare. And it's going to be so laid back. There's no pressure, no commitment. It's real stories from real people. And we'll just get to hang out.
Mm-hmm. Abby Mortensen and Susan Mendoza, Foster Curious, Monday in November, Monday in Narrowsburg. And thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us. 6 p.m.
We'll take a break and back with more Radio Chatskill after this.
A fringe group of Afrikaners went to Capitol Hill to advocate for white farmers in South Africa. They didn't bargain for what would happen next.
They were trying to get attention. They were even trying to get sanctions. They were never trying to get refugee status. And now that they have it, that domestically is a really big problem for them.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill. Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Elvira Tortora is bringing her deeply personal cabaret show, The Bookmaker's Daughter, to Narrowsburg this weekend. Tortora tells the story of her childhood as the daughter of a bookie growing up in Brooklyn. I spoke to her yesterday about bringing this show to her upstate backyard.
The Bookmaker's Daughter is about me, and I grew up in Brooklyn, and I, with my sister and my mom and my dad was a bookmaker. He was a bookie. And it was an interesting childhood growing up, and I have been wanting to sing for a very, very long time, but life happened, and I was in the fashion business for a long time. And at about 62 years old or so, I was retired, and I found myself wanting to get back to singing. And I found a wonderful community of cabaret singers, and not really knowing anything about the cabaret world, but it gave you the opportunity to sing songs that maybe were not right for you, and also tell stories about your life. And so I just started writing little bits of patter and then picking songs that kind of went with those stories. And it became a kind of a one-woman musical memoir that I performed in Don't Tell Mama. And I also happened to have a house up in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania. And people started asking me, well, why can't you bring the show up here? You know, so we're doing it.
Your show paints such a vivid picture of your childhood in Brooklyn, and you use music from the 60s to today. Is there one song in the show that holds special meaning for you, or maybe something that brings you right back to a specific memory as that child in Brooklyn with your dad, the bookie?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. I do a song. I tell a story in the show about graduating from the eighth grade, and my gift was to go to the Latin Quarter nightclub. And I see my parents sitting at the next table. I'm with my friends, and my mother looks absolutely gorgeous. You know, it's the 1960s. She's all dressed up, and I sing Blue Velvet, because also at the time, the person performing at the show that night at the Latin Quarter is Bobby Vinton. So, which was, of course, one of his hits. And then the other song that I do that is Dance with My Father from the Luther Vandross song. So you can see it's a bit, you know, big, wide spans between the type of songs that I sing, because we talk about after I get divorced and I can't remember what song I danced to with my dad, because I didn't do the usual daddy's little girl, because I wanted to be different. And I sing that song. Every song really, thank God for the wonderful Sondheim and Richard Rodgers and Sheldon Hardnick and everybody else that's out there, I was able to really make my stories come to life a little bit more with the songs. So I got to do it all. I got to tell my story, and I got to sing. And I'm very happy with the results, and the audiences seem to absolutely love it, whether they're from Brooklyn, whether they're from my friends from Oregon came in, and people from Pennsylvania did come down. A few of the people that I know from Pennsylvania came down, and they don't have any kind of a life like I had growing up, and they were just thrilled by it and loved it. And so this is what we're doing. We're going to take it on the road, and it's nice to be able to do it kind of in my second home backyard. And my sister actually was a school teacher at Woolen Hopak. So, you know, so it'll be nice for some of her friends to be able to see it also.
What kind of reactions have you received from audiences? Any particularly moving feedback you've gotten from folks?
I think it's that, even though my sister and I definitely had a different kind of childhood and not a traditional childhood growing up, it doesn't matter. The love that we got from our parents, the support of our parents, the time, it seems to resonate with everyone. And I tell enough stories that people seem to catch on to a few of them and make it their own. It brings back a lot of memories for people. As the story ends, I talk about how I found love again at 46 years old and how I had a second marriage that, or have a second marriage that is, you know, fabulous. And I think that helps too. It gives people hope and they can relate to a lot of it, funny enough. And they're not sitting in, you know, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn with a dad, as a bookie who had, kind of interesting characters come through our, door and sitting at the kitchen table. It yeah. seems to resonate with a lot of people.
Well, you talk about that change in your personal life at 47, spending decades in the fashion world, coming back to musical theater, performing. For anybody out there dreaming of making a bold, creative change midlife like you have, what advice would you give them?
To do it and just to keep on doing it. I won a Bistro Award. I was nominated for a Mac Award. Believe me, I never in a million years thought that that could happen. And for my 70th birthday, I was standing in a club on West 46th Street, an iconic Don't Tell Mama, and I was performing at 70 years old, when in my heart of hearts what I wanted to be doing was performing at 26, and it took that long to finally do it. But I did it. And anyone else can do it. Whatever it is, you want to paint, you want to act, you want to make a quilt, I don't know, whatever the hell it is, just do it. And don't really think that you can't. Have confidence in yourself. And it took me a long time to have it. And with age came a little wisdom and came a little bit of self-confidence finally. So, if you want it bad enough, just go for it. What the hell can happen? So it doesn't work out. Look, I got this far and it absolutely did work out. So I'm very, very excited to share it with everyone, the singing and the stories.
Elvira Tortora, she's in her award-winning cabaret show, The Bookmaker's Daughter, tonight and tomorrow at The Parlor in Narrowsburg, New York. You can get more information about that at The Parlor Narrowsburg's Instagram page. And there's more information about Elvira at elviratortora.com. Elvira, it's such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much and have a great show.
It was wonderful to talk to you too, Tim. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity.
And that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Before we go, a reminder that on Tuesday, school districts throughout Sullivan County have their school budget and Board of Education elections on the ballot. You can get that information at our website, wjffradio.org, including times, locations, proposed budgets. A special shout out to Patricia Urbio for putting that together. Thank you. And also on our website, you can sign up for our newsletter. Get the latest news on local news and culture delivered to your inbox every Friday. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On this week's Wait, Wait, actor Josh Gad explains why he wrote a memoir at the age of 40.
As it started to expand, it just felt like, okay, this may be a story worth telling. And then a publisher paid me, and I was like, okay, it is.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we got a bunch of people who appeared on our show just because they really wanted to. Join us out of charity for this week's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10. On Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Cloudy with a stray thunderstorm possible this afternoon and a high of 72. A thunderstorm possible in spots tonight and tomorrow. Tonight's low 62, tomorrow 74, a bit humid in the morning as well. Sunday, breezy and with a shower and cooler, high only 59, a low 43 Sunday night.
WJFF Jeffersonville, you're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.